Okay, time once again for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy here in sunny Lisbon. Stacy.
Yes, it's very sunny in Lisbon, and I have some good news, by the way. The artist taxi driver at Chunky Mark on Twitter, he has raised 10,050 pounds that he required to make his film called It's Not a Recession, It's a Robbery. But he still is seeking funding for the next 3 days. And anybody who contributes during this time, their name gets thrown into a hat where one name, one lucky name gets drawn, and they can have a lunch with Max and Stacy from Truth About Markets right here on Resonance 104.4 FM.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You know, he's going to make his mark there, 10,000 pounds or so. I think he's up to 11,000, 12,000 pounds. So he's making a film involving scenes from his taxi. And it's all very exciting. And looking forward to seeing how that goes. And what's happening in the big global economy? I see, I got the big question is, you know, the question was always when and where will this whole thing blow up? You know, because remember there was a crash in 2008, then there was a lot of money printing to reinflate the bubble for 4 years. And it looks like now the new bubble is about to burst. So the question is where and when? And is it Japan?
Yeah, that was that's pretty funny because the latest teaser for the Kaiser Report is called Mirror, Mirror on the Wall, Who's the Boomiest Stock Market of Them All? Because, of course, what we've been seeing is narcissist rallies, whether it's in the U.S., apparently the only two buyers in the market have been the companies themselves buying their own shares and the Federal Reserve Bank. So we also have the same in Japan and in the U.K. The U.K. is probably speculators. They're just wild speculators here. They like to chase things up. They figure if the U.S. Fed and the U.S. corporations can drive their shares up, then they can drive their own shares up and everything will be boomy. But Japan had a huge down day, I guess something like a crash of 7.3%. And it was down intraday even further. But it was the biggest fall, I think, in something like, almost 20 years, one-day fall. And Japanese bonds are wild swinging. They often limit down the yen, wild fluctuations. So this is one of the areas that many guests of our show, whether Chris Martinson or Charles Hugh Smith or Jim Rickards, who we have on a doubleheader this week, Japan is the heart, the ground zero, they say, of where everything will fall apart.
Yeah. That's because, you know, for years we've been reporting on how Japan is the funding currency, as it's called, for all the speculation in the world. People borrow in Japan. And the way this works is a lot of times they will sell Japanese yen, and then they take the proceeds from that sale and they use that money to go invest somewhere else where they're getting a higher rate of interest than the amount of interest they're paying on, well, actually, the money they borrow and then sell in Japan. So there's what's called an interest rate arbitrage. And this has been fueling the Icelandic bubble before it burst. It fueled many bubbles before they burst over the years. And right now it looks like this is going to be the biggest of all, where the Japanese yen is being purposefully crashed. So think of it this way, Stacey. You know, on the in America they have quantitative easing, and a lot of speculators are front-running the Fed. They buy up the stocks, knowing that the Fed's coming in with $85 billion in fresh buying every month. Well, in Japan, it's something similar, where they know that the government is going to be crashing the yen, so they've been borrowing against the yen, knowing that their cost of replacing that borrowed yen is going to go down because the yen is crashing. So where does this show up? It shows up in Europe, where the bond prices in Europe have not resolutely crashed yet. But I think this is what we're seeing now, is this bubble bursts, the Japanese sinkhole opens up, it pulls in Europe and, you know, just pulls in the world, really. It's like a Fukushima of global currencies. And preceding it, you see this wild fluctuation, 7-8% moves in bonds, currency, stock market. That's not healthy. That's the beginning of a major disruption.
And can you move over a little bit closer? Because people out there are going to hear you sounding very tinny out in the distance. But extension cord doesn't last that far. So, yeah, by the way, this is The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM. And we are on location. We're in Lisbon, where we've left the rain and gloom and cold of London. And I'm happy to say it's sunny and warm here. And so we're talking about Japan and the wild fluctuations going on there this week. And there's also been some pretty wild fluctuations in gold and silver, but they've really followed along with what that Citigroup report said were these disconnects between decades-long correlations that have suddenly broken. So either some signals are completely wrong and the opposite of what they should be. And all the one side of all these signals, like unemployment to the Dow or unemployment to any of these stock markets, one of them is easily manipulated. So the Fed can't pretend that, well, they can't pretend millions of jobs. They can't create millions of jobs for people, but they can make the stock market go higher. They can also make gold go lower briefly. So Citigroup is out with a new thing, and they say that gold has never stayed below the stairway to hell for long. So they think that the gold price in the short term could fall to as low as 1260, but by 2016 it will go to 3500. Based on, again, if you have to look at the chart, which I'll post to our site, the link to the U.S. debt. So that continues to climb, and they said, and there's a huge snap. It's the gold prices have declined far below any trend on that chart, but the U.S. debt continues to climb. Now these things tend to marry eventually. And it's often a snap, whether it's the yen carry trade coming back to normalcy or the stairway to hell being suddenly returned to normalcy.
Yeah, so the amount of debt in America is going higher and higher and higher and higher. The price of gold has mirrored that rise quite faithfully. Mm-hmm. Now, over the past 18 months or 2 years, the debt has continued to go up along this 45-degree angle toward, I think it's at $16 trillion officially. It's heading toward $22 trillion. Yeah. So this has gone up quite predictably along this 45-degree angle. The price of gold has making a radical right-hand turn into going nowhere, going flat. But, they will hook up again, and they'll hook up at a place called a higher gold price. It's not like suddenly the amount of debt will go from $16 trillion back to $12 trillion based on all the growth that's been generated from all the, from what? The meth labs? No.
I don't think there are any, yeah, I guess they're shutting down too many meth labs. Maybe that's a big problem for them. So, and of course, what else have we had over the past? So Europe continues to decline as well. This is another big economic story over the past years, but France has slid back into recession. You know, we were talking to another friend, you know, on Kaiser Report, we talked to Philip, Pierre Jovanovic, and he says, he reckons that they're on the verge of revolution in France, that there's just so much violence and anger and self-immolation going on. And then, you know, I half suspected perhaps he's just exaggerating, but then we, just this past week, we had lunch with a friend who has a house down in the south of France and has lived there for many years and speaks fluent French. And he said, without knowing this Pierre Jovanovic or having seen that, he said almost exactly the same thing, that he reckons that this summer is going to be a summer of riots and revolution. Because this is what he's seeing as well, is this menace to everything suddenly.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because all of the riots and whatnot we've seen in Greece and And we saw some stuff in Portugal a while ago, and Spain and Italy. So it's creeping up toward France, and it really doesn't seem like it's going to be able to be avoided. So, and you see the early signs of this, people, as you say, self-immolating themselves. And there's also been a whole rash of thieves, of thieving going on. People just openly stealing public bronzes and things like that. There's been people were just held up. Some tourists were held up at gunpoint at some place in France. So these are just the early warning signs of unrest that looks like it's coming.
Well, part of the unique problem going on across much of Europe is unemployed youth, and the special problem is, of course, unemployed young men. And you have it's 58% youth unemployment in Spain, for example. Now, on the flight over from London to Lisbon, I did read an article about like these bizarre thefts. Now the thefts are getting like bigger and crazier. And this is in Spain, down in the agricultural region from Alicante towards Portugal, and farmers are having like whole fields of goods stolen, of their agricultural produce stolen. They're having as much as 100 calves at a time stolen in the middle of the night. They wake up and it's all gone.
Yeah, that's incredible, isn't it? I never heard anything like it. They just steal everything, not just the horse wrestle, not horse or this. They just steal everything in the farm, every nook and cranny, the farm, the farmer, and the farmer's wife.
Yeah, they actually did compare it to the Wild West, like the cattle rustling. So
Yeah.
you're going to have, and of course, there's cutbacks across the world, austerity measures in terms of the police and fire departments and stuff like that. So you're going to have vigilantes as well, like hiring vigilantes and groups of guys going out on horseback and chasing down the bad guys, and you're going to have to pay them, to go get your cattle back. This happened in, there was a big story as well in the paper on the way over about this woman who was raped in, I think it was Oregon, and her ex-boyfriend did it. He was trying to break into the house. She called 911, emergency services 999 here in the UK, and they said, sorry, but we don't, because of the cutbacks, we don't have any police to send out there. So they had her on the phone for 10 minutes. In that 10 minutes, the guy finally broke into the house and then proceeded to rape her. But they could hear it, but they could have nobody to send over to help her. But this is the sort of, austerity measure sort of world we live in, where the costs, at least with austerity measures, you would think like your taxes and your fees and all that stuff would go down. But that's the thing, is there's inflation and all that, and deflation, and anything you're getting back, you just have to, now they've just suspended. Part of the con of paying taxes is that you get something in return. They're going to build roads for you, they're going to build schools for you and give you police and, military and all this stuff. But they're just, the con is that you're now continuing to send them all that money, but they're not giving you anything in return.
Well, they're paying off the debt for you that they incurred. But what about here in the UK? You were remarking about this recent incident where, like, Fahrenheit 451, where the people were, or Charlie Brooker's Dark Mirror, they were just taking phone videos of a person getting macheted.
Yeah, well, that's true. Oh, by the way, speaking of Charlie Brooker, Max and I had a surprise this week when Channel 4's 10 o'clock live suddenly played a clip of Max Keiser doing George Osborne is a liar. Hi, I'm
Ooh.
George Osborne, and I'm a liar. I'm a
Yeah.
liar. I'm George Osborne. That was a bit of a surprise. But yeah, so that's this killing of this soldier in Woolwich, and by these two British guys. I guess they were, at least one of them was a Muslim convert, a convert to Islam. And it was so bizarre. Just compare it to what happened in Boston, for example, where people hid inside, cowered inside for a day, and then came out cheering USA, USA when about, oh, was it 10,000 police, 15,000 police and SWAT and FBI gunned down this unarmed teenager. You see the photos from the scene, and everybody was taking photos. So these guys killed the soldier and then asked people to take photos of them, and we're just standing there for 20 minutes waiting for the police. And they got to chatting with people there, totally bloodied, with meat cleaver in hand. But you saw this stuff from right as they're killing this guy. You know, this woman, middle-aged woman, gets off a bus and goes there to nag them and tell them to stop this, and this isn't right, and, you know. And it's just weird how she's only, inches away from the guy and doesn't seem scared at all. Where I just can't imagine that ever happening in America, where somebody's not going to be afraid, unless it's a woman, of course. You know, the guy who beheads people in Saudi Arabia, the chief guy, said, the women are never afraid. It's the men that cry.
Yeah, that's right. So that was interesting juxtaposition of the way people handle these types of things. And I guess, you know, again, in Britain, they're just like, they have a resolve. America is all scatterbrained, running around.
Yeah, but, you know, Charlie Brooker, when he predicted people filming these sort of gruesome scenes, you see what was happening there is that there's a disconnect. It really disconnects you from life, because I'm sure that's part of the reason why they felt no fear is they had their iPhone or Samsung phone pointed between them and the bad guy. You know, the guy with bloody meat cleaver. There was a sort of separation going on there. They were divorced from the reality around them. They felt clearly as if it was some sort of video game or movie that they didn't run. That would be the normal response in a normal human being out in the, you know, forest of, you know, 10,000 years ago. You would run. Right? You wouldn't sit there and chat with a guy with a meat cleaver.
Well, the competition to have cool photos on your tweet is pretty fierce. So everyone's a war photographer. You're like on the front line. You know, they're taking war, this failed war on terror. So you need good photos for your tweet stream. So you want to risk it, you know? Get them photos on your tweet stream. You want to build up your followers. By the way, I've got now almost 60,000 followers. I think last week I was saying I was going to overtake Faisal Islam, which I now have. Now I'm shooting for Paul Mason. I got to get, I think he's got 70,000. So I need to get over 70,000 to get ahead of Paul Mason. Yeah, I'm the king.
Well, if you happen to come upon a tragedy, it does add a lot of followers. I was saying, you know, there was some rapper dude that witnessed this murder in Woolwich.
Yeah.
And he was... You know, in very, I can't mimic him, but he was doing it in rap speak. Like, dudes, I just saw a man just lose his head. He just got his head chopped off. It's right here in front of me. These two Brettas, they came out and they killed this white dude. And, you know, he went from like less than 1,000 followers or about 1,000 followers to over 20,000 the last time I saw. So, you know, you happen onto a gruesome scene and suddenly you have these followers for the rest of your life.
Yeah, beyond getting famous for 15 minutes, now you have to monetize that fame. So this is the post-fame, post-Warholian apocalypse. So, you got to make as much as you can on the catastrophes that you witness on a daily basis.
Monetize the awful things you see.
Yeah, if you want to stay ahead on the Twitter scores, you know, you got to keep ahead on your clout score. My clout score is at 84. You know, I'm right up there. I think Charlie Brooker's clout score is 84. And who else? A few other people, you know, but I got to get to 86, 85, 86. That's where I got to be.
Well, I just forgot. I was about to say something, but I forgot.
Oh, yeah, probably because your cloud score is only 72.
Okay. Darn. Well, so over to the U.S., I saw Madea Benjamin of Code Pink interrupted Obama when he was talking about drone strikes. This is another part of that Charlie Brooker dystopian future, which is actually not the future, but now. And she interrupts Obama reading from his teleprompter, about what he's his policy on drone strikes, blah, blah, blah. And she forced him to shut up for at least, you know, 90 seconds there. And she was saying, you know, what about Alawaki's son, Rahim, I think his name was. He's a U.S. citizen. Completely no allegations of terrorism or anything against him. He was apparently going to look for his father. He was there in Yemen looking to find out. He hadn't seen his father for years and was trying to find his father, and they killed him with a drone strike. So she was asking him about this, and, you know, in front of a room full of journalists, and then she was being escorted out. But Obama tried to speak but couldn't speak because she kept interrupting him as she was being escorted out. Now, apparently, like, the likes of Huffington Post political journalist was there in the room and was tweeting for her to shut up. So, let the president speak. And then she finally was removed from the room, so it was silence again, and Obama said, well, obviously I'm going to go off script a bit here. Everybody laughed, all the journalists laughed, because of course he was now off script because the teleprompter was, he had gone off the teleprompter. And then he said, well, I obviously don't agree with what most of what she said. And they erupted in cheers and applause. And, you know, here's the very same industry applauding him like that for, you know, telling this woman to shut up when they themselves have been the victim of this police state, this emerging, as Piers Morgan, even on television in America, said it's kind of tyranny. They've been basically hacking the and spying on AP journalists, and now it turns out they're also the Department of Justice. Eric Holder himself was named James Rosen, a Fox News journalist, as a co-conspirator in a crime for publishing something that a whistleblower leaked to him. So they're, and yet they're still applauding.
Yeah, I'd like that recent incident with Bill Maher and Glenn Greenwald. You know, Bill Maher's casual racism toward Islam was called out by Glenn Greenwald. And because I've been saying this for a few years now, and finally he got taken down several pegs by Glenn Greenwald, who's a really smart guy, really good writer, really calls it, really does a good job. And, you know, it's amazing, though, that Barack Obama guy, he's loved by the people in America that don't really pay much attention.
Okay, so let's move to Google, because here's a company that says it does no evil. And it's emerged that they pay no taxes, essentially, in the UK, though they have billions in sales here. But they run all the billions of sales through Ireland and then through the Caymans.
Well, they did a secret deal with the Irish government, maybe 10 years ago or more, where they pay less than 2% taxes on revenues. This is totally a secret deal. Now, this confirms several trends we've been talking about for years. Number one, Irish government, most corrupt government in Europe. Number two, you know, you've got incredible. Number two is the austerity Irish people are suffering from has a lot to do with the fact that the money that would have normally gone into the pockets of the government to offset this austerity has been stolen.
Yeah, but as Eric Schmidt told BBC News while he was in London this past week, it's up to the population and their politicians. If they're the ones that don't want, they're the ones that give us these deals. So, you know, it's up to them to change their tax rules. But of course, what he's basically suggesting is that you need a global government who can enforce these, because that's the thing, is that these, you know, what's really changed dramatically over the past 100 years through clever use of propaganda is that populations hate other populations. They hate people. They hate humans. They don't want any immigrants coming in. They don't want people to be able to move from place to place, where, which is ever most beneficial to them tax-wise and employment-wise. But corporations can be everywhere instantly. It's like quantum physics for them. They could be wherever they feel like being, wherever it charges them the least, wherever they have the least fewest obligations, and their capital can move anywhere in an instant. And yet the populations themselves are trapped behind layers and layers of bureaucracy and borders.
Yeah. Well, the population is missing a trick here, because as you point out, the companies are global. They're international. They game the global system. They're globalized, globalization. Populations then go to their local governments for redress, but the population should go to the ICC, which is the International Criminal Court, to take this global problem on from a global institution, and they should sue Google for human rights abuses. So, you know, Google will say, we're not breaking the law. It's legal. So technically, we're not breaking the law. We're complying with the law. But nevertheless, they're causing human rights abuses. I mean, if an African dictator slaughters a lot of people, and he also is the guy who writes the laws for his country, he'll say, "I'm not breaking the law. The law says I'm free to slaughter people. I'm not technically breaking the law." So what happens? They go to the International Criminal Court. They go to The Hague. They get taken to these global institutions, and they are put on trial. Now, here you have Google or Amazon or the other one that's gaming the system. They're causing incredible austerity. People are suffering. People are dying. So they write the laws. It just came out that Citibank is writing something like 75 out of 80 clauses of the recent bank reform of another reform that's not being obeyed. So these companies are writing the very laws that are supposed to be governing them. Well, in that case, you have to go to the Human Rights Court. The International Criminal Court, Human Rights Court in The Hague, it's a human rights issue.
Yeah. Well, speaking of human rights, though, also to give a level playing field is everybody should be born and they should get their passport and it should just say human, you know, international human. And people should be able to move like they were for the past 2 million years. Up until the last 30 or 40 years, they should just be able to move wherever they want. And therefore, it disincentivizes nations like the UK and France and US and others from looting certain areas. Because if you're going to loot and profit your own population, then say from, you know, parts of Africa, the Congo, but then the Congolese, the people who live there can come to London in order to benefit from the stuff you're looting from them, you know, people will be disincentivized at the cost of having to pay the full cost of their financial crimes and their economic crimes. So that's my theory, but also that, you know, governments would always have to fight, you know, to attract the best the sort of humans they want living there.
Well, given the current parameters of the system as it operates right now, you can take a case to the ICC. So you don't necessarily need to say, well, we need to restart the clock and everyone that has a human on their passport. You can just go right now to the ICC and wage a complaint. All you need is a lawyer that does this type of thing. And there are several high-profile human rights lawyers that I'm sure will be willing to take on the case. So somebody in the UK, or somebody especially in the UK, should hire one of these high-profile international rights lawyers and sue Google, Amazon, and the other one I can't remember, for human rights abuses at the International Criminal Court. Now, we tried to get this going a few years ago in reference to Goldman Sachs. We were actually in touch with one of these famous human rights lawyers to sue Goldman Sachs for human rights abuses. They talked to us briefly, and then they stopped talking to us. So either they just lost interest, or who knows what the story is there. But the machine is in place. Now, the mistake, the only thing that's needed is a change in thinking. So if you're living in the UK, and you're suffering as a result of these companies gaming the system, writing laws to themselves, and ripping you off, and causing unnecessary austerity, and the pain and suffering that results, think globally, not locally. Take the case to the International Criminal Court, hire the appropriate lawyer and sue them on those grounds. This guy, Eric Schmidt, is one of these African dictators that machetes people to death, chops their arms off, murders them, pisses in their face. Okay, you need redress. Go to the appropriate venue. Hire the appropriate lawyer.
Okay, so by the way, Bilderberg meeting is coming up soon. It's in Watford, and Alex Jones will be in the UK if he's allowed past the border guards. he's prepping the world media for the fact that he might not be allowed past the UK immigration checkpoint at Heathrow. Of course, he won't know until he shows up whether or not he's allowed into the country. Do we have any plans to see Alex Jones? We're definitely going to go out there. Our friend Charlie Skelton, who writes for The Guardian, one of the first mainstream media outlets to actually write about Bilderberg. And now it's actually kind of getting even more mainstream in the fact that I saw Business Insider wrote a piece a few weeks ago, maybe 2 or 3 months ago, where they looked at the, you know, one of those charts that connect companies. And sure enough, Bilderberg, basically, the guys who go to Bilderberg are linked to every single corporation on Earth. So they said, well, maybe if they're meeting like this, maybe the records should be public. The minutes should be public, at least.
Right. So Bilderberg's coming up. Alex Jones is coming. So hopefully we'll get Alex Jones on our show. I reached out to his people. They said that they are going to work on it. But as you know from this show, I'm not one of these people that is a big Bilderberg follower, because I don't really see why you need to point to a group of people that are doing something in the back room when you have people doing something that are openly breaking the law and nobody's doing anything about it. Like, so for example, like I would say, with these companies in the UK, instead of going on about Bilderberg, launch a lawsuit against them on a human rights court. That would be what I would do. Going to Bilderberg and finding yet more people doing shadowy things. We already know people are doing shadowy things. It's gone. We already know it. I don't see the point of it. It's the bottom line. I don't get it.
Well, especially that there is so much out in the open. So, for example, like, look, in the past week alone, we saw Stevie Cohen, a billionaire hedge fund manager that everybody's known for years, by the way. We've seen the allegations for years that he is engaged in insider trading. And lo and behold, the Department of Justice has gathered a huge amount of information that, in fact, he has been engaged in insider trading. And it looks like the Department of Justice may go after him using RICO, the racketeering laws that are used to go after, that were used to go after the mafia. And the reason why they use RICO is it's a way to turn the underlings, because they often, with the mafia, it was often impossible to get direct evidence against the dons, because the dons never get their hands dirty. So they use this RICO legislation to go after the entire organization, take down the organization. If you benefited from these crimes, then you are just as guilty. So they're talking about going after Stevie Cohen with this. But Stevie Cohen has countered with his own counteroffer. He's gonna he won't plead guilty, but he'll pay a big fine and he'll stop accepting money for his hedge fund from outside investors. This is the deal he's offering the Department of Justice, and they'll probably take him up on it.
Well, the phrase you hear now is deferred prosecution.
That's it.
So this is something that Stevie Cohen, here's a hedge fund manager worth billions who's caught breaking the law, part of a criminal racket, and he negotiates a deal for deferred prosecution. So, I mean, of course, a banker would come up with this, because it's like a zero coupon bond where, you know, you're buying a bond or you're buying a, you know, it's a financing gimmick, isn't it? You know, you're going, it's a balloon payment. I'll do my time in jail after I'm dead, is essentially the deal he's cut. He said, I'm guilty. And I understand that you've got a case. It's an ironclad case. You could shut me down and put me in jail, but here's the deal I'm going to offer you. I'll do 100 years in jail once I'm dead. And in the meantime, though, I'm going to pay you a fine. I'm going to give you some money. So the regulators are going to take the money. That means that they're corrupt. So they're part of the racket. This proves that the regulators are part of the racket. Just like the hedge fund guys are writing the laws that are supposed to be used to govern them, the regulators and the police are negotiating settlements based on their own self-interest, which is tied to the same pool of ill-gotten gains. So again, you end up with where you started, where people are being asked to suffer austerity. You know, 5, 10 years ago, nobody cared because everyone was getting rich on the housing bubble. Then the housing bubble burst, and then you had the society split. You know, now you have people who are being forced in. You know, the unemployment in Spain for in the youth is 60-70%. These people have been thrown under the bus.
Well, speaking of being thrown under the bus, so here in the UK, by the way, this is what I was going to say about 20 minutes ago that I forgot. So the Help to Buy scheme. Now, this is George Osborne's cunning plan to rescue the UK economy by creating like these Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac sort of situation where the UK taxpayer and government are going to back. Basically up to 20% of a mortgage, and it's non-recourse. So if whoever acquires this mortgage for these new build homes fails to be able to pay it, then the taxpayer just loses. So just like what happened in the United States. Okay, so Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac backed mortgages. Now they back something like 90 something percent of all mortgages, new mortgages. And the taxpayer is on the hook for these bad debts. So we said, as soon as he announced it, we did a special Kaiser Report episode calling it a Ponzi scheme and stupid and the most moronic thing we've ever heard of. Apparently, he got very upset with this program, where we called his show his scheme moronic, and that was March 30th. So, cut to 5 or 6 weeks later, then first Fathom Consulting, which is made up of five former Bank of England economists, said exactly the same thing. They said it was a stupid idea and that, in fact, it was dangerous. That if they were, tr if th the five of these guys were trying to come up with a scheme that would destroy the UK economy, this would be it. Then Mervyn King, last week, this past week, he came out as he's exiting the Bank of England for the last time and said that the Help to Buy scheme is moronic and it's a stupid program and it will destroy the economy. And then by the end of the week, the IMF also came out and said the same thing, that this was a stupid idea. But George Osborne is, I guess, stuck on stupid. He's going to go full steam ahead with this program for the UK taxpayer to underwrite 20% of all new mortgages.
Well, he has no choice because it's the only way to keep the Ponzi scheme going. You know, they objected to the phrase Ponzi scheme that we used on our show. So we got a 4-page letter that said that this was objectionable. But then we've had, you know, all these various groups, including Mervyn King, agree with us. But he has no choice because if they don't keep the Ponzi scheme going, the housing market will collapse. And then so, but they have to keep it going. But it makes no difference because it's a globalized economy, and it looks like Japan is going to open up the sinkhole. That's all these economies are going to drop in there, as I've been saying, and a few others have been saying. It's just a matter of when and who and lining up the stars. But there is this global sinkhole that is opening up.
Yeah, well, you know, also we were the kind of in terms of speaking of a sinkhole, like a sudden out of the blue, just the earth gives way, is, one of the first people to articulate it so well was Professor Fiketa on our show, and that's been another big issue this past week or two, because we interviewed Sandeep Jaitley about the notion of the price of gold heading for extinction. And that is basically a sinkhole in the global economy, which suddenly goes to barter overnight, because there is no price for gold. You won't be able to get a price for gold. There won't, no amount of dollars would, you wouldn't exchange your gold for any amount of dollars, any amount of euros, any amount of yen. It'll just evaporate overnight. Now, I saw the FT, our friend Isabella Kaminska was dissing this notion that backwardation of gold means anything. So why don't you talk about backwardation of gold and the part of this volatility of the currency fabric, the currency matrix around the world that fits perfectly in with what's happening with the yen and the instability of the system at the moment.
Well, you look, Fiketa says the extinction of the price of gold. He's talking about the paper price of gold, which is negotiated in the futures market. Because right now there is no cash price for gold. When people say the price of gold is $22 an ounce, they are referring to a futures contract. They're not referring to the cash price. So he's saying that the futures market's going to explode and disappear completely because it's completely rigged. And what you're left with are people doing deals with gold, but it'll be on a deal per deal basis. So that's the price will be whatever one pays for it. But there will be no price quoted in the newspaper, because there won't, just like there's no price quoted in the newspaper today for cash gold. If they did, they would print the price of gold, which is now 20% higher than this paper price. This is the cash gold. This is what backwardation means. It means that people are willing to ignore the paper price, and they are doing deals at 10-20% higher than the paper price. And in the trading jargon, this is called backwardation. It's unnatural because it means that somebody is willing to do the opposite of what would normally be called contango, where the prices are higher as you get further down the futures contracts in time and in duration. But here, because the short term is higher, as I pointed out on the show with Sandeep Jaitley, so it means you can sell your gold right now at this higher price while simultaneously buying the futures contract and lock in a profit without giving up your gold. Okay, do you understand what I'm saying? So in other words, I can make money on my gold right now by selling it for cash that 20% higher. So let's say gold is at $1,400 an ounce. I can sell it right now for $1,500 an ounce while simultaneously buying a futures contract for $1,400 an ounce. So at the end of that transaction, I still have my gold, but I made $100. Now you say, well, that's awfully strange. It seems like free money. Yeah, it is free money. Just like the yen carry trade is free money. Just like front running the Fed is free money. Just like high-frequency trading is free money. There are many, many, many free money schemes in the world today that are being built and exploited and manipulated by people like Stevie Cohen and other hedge funds. And by the way, I'm here in Lisbon to talk to a hedge fund conference, 300 hedge fund managers, so this will be interesting. Typically, when you have this type of quote-unquote arbitrage where free money is on the table, it doesn't last very long because markets are quote-unquote efficient, so that the arbitrage would be traded away. But no, it's getting worse and worse and worse because these markets are so incredibly broken. The number of contracts short gold on the COMEX has never been higher in the history of the COMEX. I saw a chart on Zero Hedge just a few hours ago. There's something like 87, close to 90,000 contracts short. So at some point, you know, those shorts are going to have to be covered. At some point, the gold price is going to mirror the debt, which we already covered. We said that debt's now heading to $20 trillion in the U.S. That implies a gold price of $3,000. Gold's at $1,400. The short contracts have never been higher. Japan's about to blow. Gold at $3,000. You know, Ben Davies, who's a money manager in the U.K., made a very prescient comment a couple of months ago. He said, yeah, price of gold is going to 5,000, but when it gets there, nobody will own it. By this, he means that, you know, who's buying gold right now? They're being scared out of their gold. The retail investor is selling their gold. But all the conditions are lining up for a huge gap up to 3,000 or more. But by then, a lot of people are going to have been so frightened out of their position that they won't own their gold.
Now, you know, everything you're talking about is there's this totally rigged markets and people being scared into the worst position for them. Now, we've covered over the last year, we've seen LIBOR, which is the biggest market in the world, is global interest rates. So we saw that it's not even alleged, it was rigged. Global interest rates were rigged for the benefit of a few. Then we found out that also through here in London, the ISDA fix was rigged. That's the next layer. They're often actually, this ISDA fix is often linked to LIBOR. So whoever had these contracts in this $367 trillion market, the ISDA fix market, this is the derivatives market. So that was rigged as well. But there's very little, nobody's upset about this. They're more upset about, you know, something on the ground, immigrants or something. They don't care about this hundreds of trillions of dollars, quadrillions if you count both ISDA fix and LIBOR rigging. Those were rigged. Then we found out that energy prices were rigged. Then we found out that oil prices are rigged. Then we found out the gold fix market also here in London is rigged. Now in the Guardian yesterday, they said energy suppliers held back gas during UK shortage. Terminals near London and in Wales were 40% and 52% full on the day that it was claimed the UK had just 6 hours worth of gas left. Some of Britain's biggest energy suppliers were holding back gas in storage tanks at a time when the market ran into an acute shortage 2 months ago, triggering a doubling of wholesale prices. The revelations came after claims the UK was within 6 hours of running out of gas completely on 22nd of March and will feed rising public and political anger over soaring power bills and previous allegations of market manipulation. So prices ran up to, gas prices hit 150 pence a therm. The price of wholesale gas needed for homes, but also to power electricity generation, has now fallen back to 70p per therm, but still remains unseasonally high and compares with 57p a year ago and 28p in May 2009. So, I mean, there you have it. That's a 200% increase, 200% inflation in the price of gas. That, remember, they're saying that there is no inflation at all for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you see, make the comparison to the human body. The human body, and compare it to the economy here. The human body has millions and millions of little microbes and viruses and billions and trillions of little critters live in your body, on your body, little parasites. They're constantly in your system. They're chewing away. What stops you from dying is your immune system. Your immune system. Your immune system. So the UK economy or the economy of any country is full of bits that are constantly working to destroy it. What keeps these bits from killing the economy? It's the economic immune system, which is a justice. It's a application of justice. It's an application of a sound money. It's application of institutions like fair markets, free markets. All these things are kept in good nick, so that you survive against the encroaching of all of the underlying, perpetually constant, irrefutable viruses and diseases that are constantly attacking you 24 hours a day. Now, similarly, the UK just experienced a tragedy in Woolwich. Now, was that a one-off? Where did it come from? Is it based in some faraway extremist ideology? No. The economic immune system of Britain has been destroyed by the story that you just talked about. insiders that should be contributing to the integrity of the system are working to destroy the system, which opens up gaps in the system for people like machete-wielding psychos in Woolwich to go chop people to death, or for people to be setting themselves on fire because or to people be thrown out of their homes because the second bedroom is suddenly considered to be the state, et cetera, et cetera. So the economic immune system, the fabric of it, is being torn asunder by these people that you just described, insiders, regulators, market makers, bankers, politicians. And the result is encroachment of what's there anyway. Going back to the beginning of civilization, through the history of humankind, there's always an element of extreme violence and extreme duress and parasites and harm that's always on the door, ready to come in. That civilization is meant to block that out. The human body blocks it out. Nature blocks it out through the ecosystem, which is fine-tunedly balanced so that you have both the benefits of some parasitical behavior where it would list in your guts, for example, or maybe some parasitical behavior in the economy. It's called the animal spirits. Or, Keynes could have called it the parasitical spirits or the spirits that live in disease. All of these things are helpful in very, very small doses. But when you just willfully destroy the immune system and let the diseases in, and which I believe is the plot for Ghostbusters Part 2, you open yourself up to things like Woolwich. But the problem is that people look at the Woolwich tragedy and say it's a one-off, it's a tragedy, and they mistake the symptoms for the disease, and now they're going to go attack this guy's political or religious affiliates, which has nothing to do with it. It's just the fact that on an institutional level, on the banking side, the decision was made to stop engaging in sound practices, to steal as much money as possible, corrupt the immune system, and in comes the diseases, as predictable as night follows day.
And finally, in the last few minutes here, we're going to talk about this story that, as we have this global depression for the bottom 99.9% of the population who are suffering from unemployment, inflation, low employment, and menial labor. Well, one thing that's always been there throughout for thousands of years is prostitution. But as the Daily Mail points out here, maybe sex doesn't sell after all. Prostitutes going out of business as they struggle with rising rent costs and energy bills. Plus, they complain of a saturated market full of students who have to pay all these top-up fees, as they used to be called. Immigrants and out-of-work people. So there's, in London, they say that, prostitutes have had to cut their prices by up to 50%. But then they just can't afford their energy bills for wherever the home they're keeping in order to, house these homes of ill repute. They can't afford it. Plus it brings in a bad clientele, they said, so it's not worth it. Now the only market holding up is the dominatrix market, which of course fits in with this rising wealth and income gap, because of course a hedge fund manager or a banker at one of these big banks doesn't need to pay for sex, but they do feel guilty. They need to be abused and spanked. So they're able to continue affording the dominatrix.
Yeah, if you're in the banker class, everyone is completely deferential to you all the time. Everyone is constantly, kissing your butt. And you get a sense, it's very abnormal after a while. So you have to pay somebody to treat you like dirt just so you get a sense that you're of normalcy. Otherwise, you'd be living in this strange world where the doorman, the bank, the guy you meet, everyone you meet is constantly being deferential to you and kissing your butt. And after a while, it has a sense of unreality. So to balance that out, you have to go to a dominatrix and you pay this person to slap you, beat you, spit at you, degrade you, so you can feel normal again. And that market's holding up. So those people are doing well because the banker can go to any bar in the city right now and 10 women will line up to throw themselves at the banker. That market's crashing, the prostitution market.
and the prostitution market is, and the street workers are having it the worst. Their prices are now down to £20, and sometimes even less for anything. But at least they don't have the overhead cost.
Yeah, it's inflation and deflation at the same time, isn't it? So you have these two things. How much time do we have?
We have like 2 minutes.
Okay, so it's inflation and deflation at the same time because you have inflation in dominatrix market and deflation in the prostitution market. So this is mirrored in the entire economy. You're saying that there's deflation in wages and there's deflation in good jobs, but there's inflation in the price of energy due to manipulation, due to fake scarcity. Okay. So people are squeezed in this biflation situation that doesn't fit any economic theory, and you see that played out in the dominatrix prostitution market. So for the prostitutes, they're having the problem of deflation. There's a glut of prostitutes, but for the dominatrix, their prices are going up.
Their prices are going up, but you know, it takes more skill to be a dominatrix. You know, for the prostitute, anybody can just basically line up and lie on their back and do that. But for the dominatrix, it's role playing. You have to be very imaginative. You have to be interesting. It's more like a geisha sort of thing, except for a violent geisha.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Okay, well, that's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Resonance 104.4 FM, coming to you from Lisbon, where it's sunny, 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 and warm. Ha ha.
Yeah. Ha ha. Bye, y'all.